practice, and we've all watched them. A lot of us come because of that. Today, his presentation is on deal dynamics. So yep. Let me hand over to Ziv. Thank you, Ziv.
Thank you. Okay, so just quickly to the people who don't know me and have seen me running around. I don't know what I've done with the clicker. Don't worry about it. So who am I? I am a co-founder and COO of two companies. One of them has been going on for about 15 years, co-founded with my lovely partner in the back there, Chika Kosan. Just stand up. You don't need to come to the stage. Just stand up for a second. Who is the one that actually does the work? I just do the talking. And the other one has been founded 4 years ago with a different business partner and not much to do with real estate. That one is helping people invest in other things in Japan. So people who want to set up a business here, buy a business here, and also relocate to Japan. So people who are from overseas and either via the business or other means need help with the logistics of relocating to Japan. Both companies also manage properties. So NTI manages investment properties, and Nippon Bridge, the other company, manages holiday or hybrid homes, holiday homes that are being rented out for short-term stay in various capacities. So don't be shy to reach out to us. I also do the Japan Real Estate Podcast since 2017. As far as I'm aware, it's still the only strictly audio source of information related to Japan's real estate market in English. So anywhere you search online, you should be able to find the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And I also do private consulting and proxy representation. So as part of the work that I do, some people prefer to work directly with an agent. To have NTI do everything on your behalf is not that cheap. It's a few thousand dollars usually, depending on the price of the property. It's based on the percentage of the price. Some people prefer to just work with agents or with lawyers or with all the third parties involved on their own directly, but they do want somebody consulting them, helping them prioritize one property over another, guide due diligence, raise red flags, review documents before they sign them, or sign documents on their behalf. So for those people, I also do private consulting based on an hourly retainer, which is a lot cheaper. And with Bob, who is sitting there in the audience, so there you are. We've recently created the Japan Real Estate Insight Studio, which we've been demonstrating out in the hall next to Charles's system, which is also very interesting. And that particular system, if you use the QR code there, you'll have a bit of a discount. You can also just go in there and check it out for free. Basically, what it does is you grab a Japanese listing that is currently only tenanted listings, so listings that are called owner change in Japan. And the system will analyze it too. The next session that we'll have after the 3 o'clock break will actually do demos of the system live, so you'll see what exactly it gives you. But it's a very interesting system that drills down into individual listings and helps you figure out if you really want to be investing in that particular property or not. Okay, also a bunch of other things. If any of that interests you, feel free to reach out after the presentation and we'll have a chat about that. Okay, so we regularly talk to people who have worked with Japanese real estate agents and haven't had a super good experience for one reason or another. We often get approached by Japanese real estate agents who want to work with foreigners but haven't had much experience. A lot of them who have not had a good experience then don't want to work with foreigners again. The purpose of this presentation today, and this is a topic that we've covered in a bunch of presentations in past sessions as well, but in this particular one, I want to focus not only on the weird foreigner side, but also to help some of the Japanese real estate agents, and we've got quite a few of you in the crowd today, who have not worked with foreigners before, to figure out how they can do that with the least amount of damage and collateral along the way, because that does unfortunately happen a lot, and we'll talk about exactly why that happens. So two sides to every Japan real estate deal. Obviously, there's the foreigner. In most cases, if they're not residing in Japan, they'll be buying in cash. That's why she's holding this wad of cash in her hand. But as we've heard today and yesterday, there are quite a few options there for mortgages as well, even if it's investment properties. And a Japanese real estate agent, the guy here is a guy, but I've actually some of the most amazing agents that we work with are women, specifically young women. So we're very happy to see that that's a blooming industry for women to get into in Japan, and hopefully there'll be more and more of that. I just chose male and female for completely randomly. So don't take this as anything. Okay. So where do these, do both of these sides run into friction? That can happen at any stage of the deal. Normally, there's the property research. This is how every real estate deal normally advances anywhere in the world. Japan is no different. We've got property research. We got the offer stage. We've got the due diligence stage. In Japan, those two are actually in this order, whereas in other countries, you'd be doing your due diligence first and then submitting an offer, which could potentially be legally binding. Here, it's the other way around. We'll get to that in a minute. The signing and payment of the deposit, and then the settlement and handover of the property for personal use or for management in case of investment property or for management in case of a remotely managed holiday home that you're not residing in the country. Somebody needs to manage it for you. The reason that each of these stages often runs into friction of various sorts is the obvious stuff like culture and language, right? So we've discussed this again in many sessions in the past, but there are terms that are not familiar to either side. We recently had a client ask the agent if, so you're gonna organize the lawyer, right? And the agent's like, lawyer, what? No lawyer, we don't have any lawyers involved in real estate deals. So we had to explain to the agent that they're referring to the judicial scrivener, to the shihoshoshi, who is the one handling the legal ownership transfer here in Japan. They are technically lawyers, but nobody here refers to them in that in the context of a real estate deal. So they're all kind of little quirks related to just professional terms. Another major cause of friction is the timing. Foreigners specifically who are purchasing in Japan for the first time are not really used to how things work here. They're used to working with Western or other countries' realtors who are extremely hungry, extremely quick on their feet. Somebody submits an offer, a meal often explains how, you know, the agent jumps to the back of the car, makes a call, and yes, your offer has been accepted. We're signing in a couple of weeks. And doesn't happen like that here. The timing is very different. We'll discuss that in detail in a minute. Market conventions, so what things take place at what stage of the process, what is considered acceptable, what is considered not acceptable, what is common, what is uncommon. And all of these are basically based on differing assumptions and expectations that both sides have of each other. So this is not just a clueless foreigner thing. Unfortunately, it's often a clueless Japanese agent thing. People who want to work with foreign buyers, agents who want to work with foreign buyers and have never done this before, are expecting a lot of things of the buyer that they probably should not be expecting as well. So this is definitely a two-way street, and I've tried to break down most of the slides into that those two sides. So how can you avoid these on both sides? So baseline assumptions that will go with us every step of the way. The buyer, again, as mentioned, is expecting very quick action and reaction from their agent. The real estate market is a fast-moving market. It's a very lucrative market for a lot of agents. In some cases, if you're dealing with a super cheap Akiya, it hasn't been the case until a couple of years ago. Now it is kind of lucrative for them, not nearly as much as in other countries. And also the price tag in Japan is also, in many cases, a lot lower than it is in other countries, depending on what you're buying and where. So maybe not as lucrative. In any case, the Japanese agents at least, don't place emphasis on being quick. What they do place emphasis on is how well structured everything is happening, how much you need to respect each and every procedure along the way, how the paperwork needs to be done in the exact right way. Completely different set of baseline assumptions there. The buyers often expect to handle the Q&A and the due diligence on the move. So we got at the property, we look at the property. If I got a few questions, I'll ask them here, there, and there. If there's something that I don't know, it will be divulged to me in due course at every step of the way. Not always the way it happens here. The agents expect you to understand what the standard operating procedure is. And this is where a lot of agents who work with foreign buyers for the first time go wrong. They expect the buyers to know stuff that the buyers often don't. So the agent is expecting that you know what questions to ask and at what stage of the process to ask them. And it's very rare that they do if this is their first time buying in Japan. Another thing, when I first started working in real estate in Japan, a friend who does that in Australia said, the best way to make a profit on a deal is right before signing, right? Like just as you're about to sign and pay the deposit, is the time to stick in one more quick negotiation, reduce the price by another 10%. You do this here, the deal will most likely fall through. It just doesn't happen here because what the Japanese side expects is that if you've progressed to the next stage of the deal, you've accepted everything that has been discussed until this point in time. So the time for negotiation, and we'll talk about what kind of negotiation we can do in a minute, is far earlier in the deal. You can't just keep changing the goalposts and keep changing things and ask to add things or remove things from the contract. If we've moved to the next stage of the deal, it's assumed that you've expected everything that came up to this point. Now, this is not something that the buyer should be doing, but on the other hand, it's not something that the agent should expect the buyer not to be doing. So if you haven't worked with a foreigner before and you are a real estate agent, it's important to understand that things happen differently overseas. They're not doing this because they're rude or disrespectful or trying to offend you. They're doing this because this is how it's done in their country of origin or in other countries that they've been purchasing in the past. And finally, there's a misunderstanding on the buyer side on what exactly is the agent's role in this entire process. They're used to very different behavior and very different responsibilities that agents provide overseas. Similarly, the agent as well is not always clear on how these things work overseas, and they know what they think their role is along this process. They're not going to do anything else. The buyer expects them to do other things and vice versa. And this is when things start to go wrong. So breaking it down by deal phases. So if we're in the research phase, meaning the buyer wants to start looking at what listings are available in the market, we often deal with buyers who come up to us with, I'm looking for a holiday home or an investment property. It could be a condo, it could be in Akiya, it could be in Okinawa, it could be in Sapporo. I'm not exactly sure what the budget is, but if the right deal comes along, I'm open to it. Okay. On the other side of that equation, we've got the unicorn hunters who are like, hey, I saw Shumatsu post on YouTube saying that you can buy a 20,000 Akiya in Yokohama, renovated for 15,000 and rented out for 10% yield. Let's go get those deals, right? In both cases, the agent hasn't got a clue on what to do with that, right? They can't search the entire country for you. They don't even know where to start. They can't search every level of every budget. The research that they'll do for properties that are meant for investment versus for holiday home versus for your family home are completely different. And what happens in both of these cases is usually because they're Japanese, that they're usually not going to tell you that I have no idea how to help you, is you can see it very clearly for the image, but they're going to go silent, right? So crickets, no reply from the agent for 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. If we're involved in the consulting at that stage, we'll reach out to them and they'll say, I just don't know what to do. So I haven't contacted the buyer because I don't know how to help them. The buyer on the other side is assuming that the agent is not really interested in the deal anymore, or they're just not responsive, or they don't behave as agents are supposed to behave, and that's when the rip starts to happen. So to amend this, on the buyer side, have a clear set of criteria. It's okay to be looking for both an investment and a holiday home, but focus on one at a time, right? So if you've got the budget for two of them, at least spend a week or two or three researching one of them before you move on to the other. If you know a particular location that you're interested in, or even two or three locations, that's okay. But anywhere in the country is not going to help anyone. They don't know how to find that for you. Try to focus on one set of criteria at a time. And it's absolutely fine to move on to the next one. But if you're not finding what you're looking for with your initial research criteria, start thinking in advance on how you're going to amend that. So can you expand your budget? Can you consider another location? Can you go for a smaller floor plan? Can you go for potentially a longer distance walking to the station? Can you go from two parking spots to one parking spot? Try to map out in advance what the next step in your research is going to be if you don't find what you're looking for with the initial set. And then, yes, rinse, repeat, edit, expand. Expand the budget a little bit. We haven't found it. Okay, let's go down from 60 meters to 55 square meters and so forth and so forth. On the real, and yeah, and stop chasing unicorns. It's not that they don't exist, but if you want to look for that diamond in the rough kind of property, don't expect the agent to constantly be searching and spending hours and hours and hours trying to find it for you. They get paid on settlement. It's very likely that settlement is not going to happen if you're chasing a unicorn, and there's a limit to what they'll do. So if you want to look for a unicorn, which is absolutely fine, do the research on your own. Don't expect your agent to constantly search for that unicorn for you. Now, the agent side, and this is something that we really need to mention to agents that we work with again and again and again. Let your buyer know if what they're asking for is not reasonable. Like, going silent because it's not polite to say no is not going to get you anywhere with a foreign agent, with a foreign buyer, unfortunately. It is not rude to say that what you're looking for is not reasonable. In fact, if your clarity means kindness, and being unclear is being unkind. So if there is something that your buyer is asking for that they're just not going to get based on your experience in the market, and you are the experienced one in the market, let them know. And even better, of the agents that are sitting here in the room, and of the agents that I've worked with that have come and visited in the last couple of days, aside from Emil, I can point only to Gen Mamiya-san, who's sitting over there. He's the only agent, the bilingual, foreigner-friendly agent that I know, that each and every time I refer a new client to him, he's like, hey, let's jump on a call so I can better understand what you're actually looking for, and that so I can better explain to you what's feasible or not feasible. I mean, not to say anything bad about the agents that we work with aside from him. They're all fantastic, and they do a lot of this via email and chats and all kinds of things. They receive criteria, they research. But he's the only one that actually has a call with a potential buyer to clarify what it is that the buyer is looking for and to let them know if that's reasonable or not. And he then contacts me again. He says, hey, so I spoke to them. They're looking for this. I told them that that can be done, but we'll try to find it. This is kind of common practice overseas, not so much here. So exchanging emails is great, but a face-to-face call with a potential customer is the best way to really understand what they're looking for. And then we get to the offer stage. So the buyers, again, coming from a overseas negotiation mentality, this property is advertised for X, let's try offer 50% and see if they'll take it, because it's been on the market for a year and a bit, and they might take it, and if not, we'll go up to 40% and 30%. We'll get close to the asking price, but as low as possible is obviously the best, because I want to save money. In Japan, and we've mentioned this again and again in past sessions as well, even if you're offering 10 or 15% off the asking price, which is normally, aside from super luxurious Tokyo resort properties where, you know, sometimes they're slightly inflated or maybe largely inflated, normally 10 to 15% off is the most that is reasonable and polite to offer. Offers beyond that usually are not taken very seriously in Japan, to the point where the listing agent will just stop returning the calls of your buyer's agent or yourself if you're doing it directly. And even if you are offering 10 to 15% off, you need to back it with something. So I've noticed the distance to the station is a bit longer than other properties that are, you know, being advertised with the same price. I've noticed this building is a little bit older. I've noticed that I'll need to put some money into the roof because it's leaking here and there, and therefore I'm asking for a discount. In most cases, the property is being advertised, the price is being listed with all of that in mind. But if you do have a reason why you really want to offer a little bit off, explain why. Offers are not legally binding in Japan. A lot of the buyers that we work with figure that out pretty quickly, even though in other countries they are legally binding. And that leads them to think that it's okay to submit 5 or 6 or 7 different offers, see which one hits, and then just forget about the rest of them because it's not legally binding, so, you know, who cares? The agents here, though, know that backing off from an offer without any condition or explanation given in advance means that, again, that listing agent will not want to work with them or their buyer again. And if they do that too many times, then there's not an official blacklist, but people, hey, that agent, he represents those annoying tire-kicking gaijins, just don't return their calls anymore because their buyers are not serious. We offer, we make an offer assuming that we're going to be progressing if due diligence check out. Due diligence comes a little bit later normally. The buyer is assuming that once the offer is accepted, that's when we'll start digging into the details of the property, doing the property diligence, figuring out if we want to get it or not. While the agents know that any kind of condition needs to be stated on the offer specifically in advance. So you can submit an offer and then, you know, the most common case actually in this case is structural inspections, right? So you can submit an offer, the offer is accepted, and then you're saying, okay, so now I'm gonna order and commission a structural inspection. That should have been noted on the offer in advance. Some sellers will even refuse that, but whether they do or don't, if it's reliant on the building's due diligence information, for example, how much they've got collected in reserve funds, what's the renovation history in the past 10 years, are there any funds owed as a loan, are there any funds owed by owners, there are a lot of stuff, there's a lot of stuff that you want to find out about the property that you're going to be purchasing. Some of that might not be available on the listing or in advance. If it's reliant on an offer, that condition needs to be noted on the offer. And we had a whole big presentation on that last summit, but inspections here are the exception, not the norm. So in Japan, the structural most Japanese buyers do not ask for a structural inspection, even if they're buying an older house. It's not that common. It's becoming a little bit more common in recent years, but it's still the exception rather than the norm. So the inspection, again, is a condition that needs to be noted. What will happen if you do insist on those top four things as a buyer is that your agent, if that's their first time working with you, is going to be entering meltdown mode. They should have told you in advance that this is how things work here. Most of them, again, are unclear, not because they think they're being unkind, they're unclear because they don't want the confrontation. But inside they're fuming, and we have had a few agents blow out at certain stages along the way. And again, the mistakes that the agents make is they should have told you in advance how this works. So if you're an agent in Japan and you're starting to work with a realtor with a foreign buyer for the very first time, do educate them on how things work here, because if you don't, it's perfectly normal for them to assume that things work here the same way that they work overseas. It's not out of malice, it's not their fault, they just haven't been educated. So it's your job, unfortunately, as an agent, and that's going back to the topic of agent's role, it's your job to let them know how things work here to help them avoid creating this rift between you. Okay, so how do we do offer? We, again, prioritize and submit them one at a time. If we have a particular property that we want to be purchasing as a top priority, we're not going to be submitting three offers for this one and my second best and my third best and my backup. We're going to submit one offer for the property that I'm most interested in. If that turns out fantastic, we'll progress. If not, we'll say thank you, we'll explain why we're not progressing, and we'll move on to the next one. We do the Q&A before we submit the offer. Some of the information might not be available in advance, and if that's the case, the listing agent or your buyer's agent will tell you that. But ask as many questions as you can in advance, especially if those questions are not related to anything that the listing side needs to provide. For example, we've had clients apply for a property, submit the offer, no special conditions on it, and then they suddenly find out that it's actually too close to the local highway interstate interchange, right? So, oh, actually, I didn't think about that, but that's too noisy. Or, oh, there's this chemical plant a couple of kilometers away that's probably gonna stink. So those are the questions to ask in advance, not after you've submitted the offer. And that stuff that's information that you should be researching on your own. So look at Google Maps, look at the age of the house, look at the size of the layout. Submitting an offer and then suddenly remembering that it's actually too small and the yard is too small for your dog, not cool. That stuff that you should have, it's on you to check all of that out before you submit an offer. If you do have conditions related to information that needs to be divulged after the offer, note these conditions on the offer. And lowballing, again, is not a thing here. And on the agent side, you need to explain to your buyers, again, that these offers are not legally binding, but they are, they are reputational binding, right? The offers are not legally binding in the sense that no one's gonna sue you and you don't have to pay any kind of, you don't have to forsake any kind of deposit if you then pull the offer back, but you're burning your relationship with that seller, you're burning your buyer side agent's relationship with the seller side agent, and honestly, you're contributing to the bad stigma that foreign buyers often have in Japan, which it's unfair to us, but it's mainly due to ignorance. So the agent's job is to explain to the buyer again how things are different here. And don't be shy to ask your buyer if they have any conditions that they would like to put on the offer, because you want to avoid a situation where they're suddenly waking up post-offer with, oh, actually, but structural inspection, or, oh, actually, but we haven't even checked. Be proactive about it, which is tough for Japanese agents in many cases, but be proactive about it. Just ask them if they don't put any conditions on the offer of their own accord, or if they're not working with a consultant like ourselves, ask them, are there any conditions that you'd like to add to the offer? Do you need a structural inspection? Is there anything in the building's investigation report that might cause you to pull back the offer? Tell me that so I can write that on the offer form in advance. Again, yes, structural inspections and those due diligence reports in condo building cases are specific items that you need to tell your buyer to ask about. And without getting upset, explain to them that Japan is not a high negotiation culture. They just don't know that. If a foreigner is buying here for the first time, they often do not know that this is not an environment where you can come in with half price, off the listing price, lowball offers. In most cases, again, some cases are different. Just explain that to them, educate them. Okay. Contracts. The buyers often assume that everything will be done in English. Not the case in Japan, right? If your agent is the bilingual, experienced, foreigner-friendly agent type, then they will hopefully provide you with at least summaries. We prefer detailed translations. It's okay for you to translate documents yourself via ChatGPT and for the agent to then double check the translation and confirm that it's correct. But no, these documents will not be done in English. The agents know this, but they often neglect to tell their buyers that this is going to be the case. So the buyers reach contract signing day, the week or two before contract signing when they receive the document drafts. Everything is in Japanese and they just have no idea. What agents often, I think, don't know in Japan is that buyers are legally not allowed to sign documents that they don't understand, right? So the fact that you've given them documents in Japanese and you expect them to somehow figure out what these documents contain, the legal onus is going to be on you as the agent if you haven't made sure that they understand every single word in that document. So it is your legal responsibility to make sure your buyer knows what they're signing. Again, we mentioned this before, the buyer is assuming that, you know, I've received the draft of the contract and the important matters documentation and all of the appendixes, and when I'll come to signing day, I'll ask to actually amend this, and that. Again, progression means acceptance, but your buyer often doesn't know that because it's not always done that way overseas. The agent knows that the drafts are really the final version. They're just there for the buyer to read and confirm. If there are errors, we'll amend them, but otherwise there will be no further changes to the documents. Again, let the buyer know that this is how things work here because they often don't know that. On the topic of deposit, the buyer is assuming that they're going to sign the contract and then they'll start transferring the deposit, the 10% or whatever it is, to Japan. International remittances take a few days. So they're assuming that I'll sign, then I'll go home. I'll figure if I'm doing Wise, I'm doing a direct bank transfer. How exactly am I going to be transferring the funds into Japan? If I get a Japanese account, then I'll talk to my bank and I'll tell them to wire the amount. This is not how it works here. So again, your agent knows that the deposit should arrive immediately once the contract is signed. In fact, in many cases, they'll be sitting face to face with a laptop, and as soon as the signature is done, then the buyer will transfer the money and display the remittance receipt. But again, your buyer might not know that, so let them know. This becomes even more serious when we're talking about the actual settlement amount, but even for the contract and the deposit, those funds need to arrive in the same day. The fact that they haven't been remitted on the same day can blow up the deal and can even cost you that money, even though you haven't actually transferred the deposit yet. If you transfer it a week later because it took you time to figure out the international remittance, you could be losing the deal and legally obliged to pay the deposit anyway because you've already signed the contract. So know this in advance. And if you're assuming that you already know all there is to know about the property and you haven't asked any questions, you could be mistaken because your agent is assuming that if you didn't ask, you don't care, right? So in many cases, agents that we work with, they're all, it's important to clarify, all of the agents that we work with are by the book, they're super professional, and they are very due diligent in the sense that they make sure that the deal goes through legally and smoothly and ownership will be transferred correctly. But they are not your strategists, and they are not going to tell you, in most cases, what questions to ask. They're assuming that anything you want to know about the property, you're going to be asking them directly. You're supposed to be the proactive one, not your agent. Not the best way to work as an agent in my personal opinion, but unfortunately that's the way they are. So if any of this doesn't happen, things get a lot worse. And there's a lot of blaming and shouting going on. Again, because one side is assuming A, the other side is assuming B. When they actually get down to signing, reviewing, paying deposits, they suddenly discover, which is very late in the process now, that the other side was completely unaware of how things are going to be progressing here. And that's when things start to get a little bit ugly. So the way to amend that is for you as the buyer to request and make sure that you're getting full English document drafts. Yes, you need to sign the original documents in Japanese, but you should be receiving a verbatim translation of every word in those documents to review before you sign them. The agent, if you've done the translation yourself via AI or whatever other tool with a Japanese friend, the agent needs to review the translation versus the original Japanese document and make sure that you know exactly what you're signing. You need to know exactly how much you're going to be transferring in deposit amount on the day of signing the contract and make sure that the deposit is ready for immediate payment as soon as you've signed it. And immediate payment doesn't mean you remitted it right now and it's going to get here in 5 or 6 business days. Immediate payment means that it's going to land in the agent's or the seller's account immediately once the contract is signed. At least that's the way it's legally supposed to work. And anything you want to ask about, just ask. Don't expect that things will be explained to you if you haven't asked them, because they normally won't be. Ideally, if the agent is doing things right, they will provide you with that full English translation. They will tell you exactly how much you need to remit, and they will prepare you for immediately getting the funds landing into their account. And they will make sure that you understand what you're signing. So the way the document explanation meeting works is, they read them sentence by sentence. You say hi, you nod your head, you make sure that they want to see you confirming, but they're not really going to ask you normally if you understand what it is that's just been explained. So just make sure that the buyer actually understands what it is that you're explaining to them. And the best time to do this is way ahead of the contract signing, when you're reviewing the document drafts together. So, what is it that you need to guide your buyers in advance to make sure that they're aware of? The list is endless, but here, the list is endless, but here are a few things that agents might not know that buyers don't actually know if it's their first time buying in Japan. So, a lot of buyers are expecting asbestos and red lead paint checks to be in existence or supplied together with the property that they're going to be purchasing. In reality, 99% of the cases, there will not be such information available. Those checks have never been done. Some buyers are very surprised by this, and when they see this on the document draft, they suddenly want to back out of the deal because they're terrified of asbestos or red lead paint. They do not know that sellers in Japan do not have, in most cases, unless it's a real estate company selling the property, in the vast majority of cases, and definitely if the property is old, the sellers do not have any post-settlement liability to anything that's wrong with the property. Some of them, again, are shocked when they see this on document draft, but that's the norm in Japan. They are not aware of the difference between septic tanks to properties that are on sewer lines to properties that are on kumitori, cesspool, those stinky collection tanks under the house. They're not aware of the potential problems with well water as opposed to city water supply. They haven't got a clue. So even if they do see kumitori and well water in the contract, they have no idea that there's something that could be problematic there for them. And if you don't explain that to them and they end up moving into a property and suddenly smelling a military latrine under the house, they're going to blame you for it because you didn't tell them what comes with the kumitori system or how often it needs to be serviced and how stinky it is, right? They're not aware of everything that Tracy has been explaining here and has been explaining for the past few years in these summits of how short-term rentals work. A lot of them are assuming that if they purchase the property, they can immediately put it on Airbnb. A lot of them are assuming that if the property is out in the countryside, there will be property managers out there who are able to serve them. They're not aware that a long-term lease in Japan is automatically renewable every 2 years. And if it's not, there has to be a really good reason for it not to be renewed every. They have no idea about how these things work if you do not explain it to them. They're not aware of all the nuances of terrace homes, duplexes, the ones that are very common in Kyoto and Osaka and a lot of other cities, adjoining walls. How if you're renovating a property like that, you need to be aware of what you're doing to the neighboring property, how sometimes there's actually a little bit of a kumiai, like an owner union involved in these terrace homes. They don't know how these things work here. They don't know what non-rebuildable properties mean in a practical sense. They don't know what a setback required when rebuilding in a practical sense means. They don't know the difference between, the legal difference between a renovation, which is anything that's done to a property with an intact foundation and a few supporting walls, as opposed to a complete rebuild, and what insurance covers or doesn't cover. They're not aware of what maintenance expenses are like, whether it's a condominium unit or a standalone home. They're not aware of what life is like in the Japanese countryside. A lot of buyers will be buying a property out in the Naka and then come complaining to the agent that they've never told them that the bus only runs there twice a day, or that the neighbors hate foreigners, right? So some agents who work these local areas are aware enough to float these items, but if you're, like many of the agents that we work with, if you're based in Tokyo or Osaka or Fukuoka, one of the big cities, and you're helping people buy properties out in the Naka, it might be a good idea to ask them if they visited that location in the past, if they've ever lived in the Japanese countryside, if they're aware of the accessibility and infrastructure issues, because a lot of them have the dream, but they've never actually lived it. And they don't know how to deal with their Japanese neighbors. They don't know what's expected of them and what's completely unacceptable to a Japanese neighbor. And the list goes on and on and on and on. So the point is, your buyer doesn't know what questions to ask. And if you don't tell them that, then they're not going to know it. Settlement and handoff, I'll go through it very quickly. I know I'm at the end of my time. Buyers assuming, we've talked about this yesterday, that funds are going to escrow. Usually not the case in Japan. The realtor is assuming that all funds will go directly to wherever they need to go. Not the case with buyers. Buyers sometimes cannot transfer funds directly to the seller. The seller hasn't got a clue about what his SWIFT big code is and how to accept an international transfer. Their bank will not even allow them to accept it. So the realtors are making some pretty bad assumptions this end as well. They're assuming that they'll remit the funds in advance, whereas the realtor is expecting it to arrive exactly by 9 a.m. on the day of settlement, because otherwise, you know, there's always a chance that somebody's going to run off with the money. On the other hand, if it arrives even one day later, then they're already in breach of the contract. All of these expectations need to be aligned in advance. They're expecting that they'll receive immediate confirmation and title deed in hand, whereas the agent knows that 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks post-settlement is when the new registration documents and title deed will arrive. Most of them don't even call or message the buyer to let them know the transaction went through smoothly. They're just expecting that everything is completely understood, whereas the buyer is sitting there panicky because it's the first time buying in a foreign land, and who knows if the property is now mine or not. Keep them posted. If you're a Japanese agent, let them know what's happening with the settlement. And most importantly, they're expecting, somehow they're expecting that the agent will set up their utilities, get their insurance in place, and also meet them at the entrance with the keys and explain to them how to use each and every section of the property and what this key does and what this open. This is not the case in Japan. The agent is assuming that the buyers will figure all of this out on their own, which is often not the case, and that's when they really end up hating each other. So just cover your bases. So you need to know in advance where you're remitting to. You need to ready the funds well in advance. Again, even more serious than with the case of the contract signing and deposit, you need to make sure that you know where the funds are and how long it's going to take them to arrive at their destination at the right time, at the right day. Confirm where you're going to receive or be picking up your keys, and know how you're going to manage your property. You can ask your agent, maybe they will do it for you, but most of them will not. And if not, they'll hopefully refer you to somebody else, or they won't. But if you're expecting everything to be set up for you when you enter the property for the first time, if you haven't discussed it in advance, it's probably not going to happen. And agents, you need to be ready to receive all of the funds in bulk from your buyers. I've run into at least three cases now where a Japanese agent who thinks that they're ready to be working with foreigners suddenly realizes that their bank doesn't actually allow them to receive funds from overseas. So they're asking the buyer if they could remit the funds directly to the seller and make sure that the buyers that the funds arrive exactly by 9 a.m. the next day, and to the lawyer and to the agent with their fee. None of this will happen if you're dealing with international transfers. With Wise, it sometimes happens instantaneously, but sometimes even Wise want you to want to take 4 or 5 days to double check everything is legit. So you as an agent need to receive the funds from your buyer and distribute them domestically, and then you can receive them in advance because you're the one taking care of the deal, but not the seller. You need to know exactly when the funds will be remitted and when you'll be receiving them, and you need to let your buyer know if you can manage the property for them and if you can send the keys to them and where, and if not, ask them if they're prepped for it and ask them how they're going to manage the property post-settlement. It's okay not to do it for them, but you do need to ask them because a lot of the time they're assuming that's going to be the case. If you've done all of the above, you might actually end up not smooth, I would say. It's always going to be, the first time is always going to be a bit of a rough ride. But if you're asking each other the questions in advance and relaying the information to each other well in advance, you'll most likely at least end with, you know, a good relationship intact and be ready to do it a little bit smoother on your next purchase or your next time servicing a foreign client. But the first time can be rough. It can be made a lot less rough if you discuss everything that needs to be discussed in advance, and if you're aware that the other side is coming from a very different place. It's just not the same here. I'm only slightly over time, I think. Yes, so, questions? Yes, we'll run the mic from there. We got here, so.
I'm speaking as an American. We have these things called title companies, right? But we all know that there's costs involved in the real estate transaction. So if you're talking about a traditional sense where the Mr. Buyer would pay Mrs. Seller directly once all the documents are signed and confirmed, How do the various costs, say, for example, the commissions to the real estate agents and so forth, get paid?
I'll pull that back. So traditionally, if everything is done domestically within Japan, then those will be separate transactions made from one Japanese bank account to another Japanese account, bank account, one to the seller, one to the lawyer, one to the agent. And one eventually to the tax department when you get your purchase tax bill. Because we're dealing with, in many cases, foreign buyers who do not have a bank account in Japan and can't do this, again, we would recommend that the agent wrap their head around the concept of receiving all of the funds in bulk and, as per the settlement statement, distributing them domestically to where they need to go at the date at which they need to go there. We have had cases where shihoshoshis, where the judicial scriveners in charge of the ownership transfer stepped up, usually in case where the agent, for one reason or another, suddenly discovers that they can't receive funds from overseas, and they've done it on their behalf, but it's really the agent's job to do that. So they should be receiving everything from you in advance and distributing it domestically. Hands, stream, yep, back there.
I'm just curious, the role of buyer versus seller agents. In the States, there can be deals, as I'm sure you know, where basically the buyer is not paying any commission. It's just that there's two agents, but the person who's taking the buyer around is actually representing the seller. And then there might be another agent who actually has the listing, and so the seller's paying those two agents, and the buyer's not paying it. Is there that kind of situation here, or is it always a buyer agent, a seller agent, and the buyer's paying the seller, the buyer agent?
So a buyer's agent is not a super common thing in Japan. The way it legally works here is the listing agent or the seller's agent, the one who's in charge of the listing, or there could be a few of them. Exclusivity is not that common here. So the seller's agent who helped sell the property charges the seller. Any other agent who might have brought a buyer in gets to charge the buyer. And often it's going to be the same agent. So the one listing the property will look for a buyer, and if they manage to find a buyer on their own, they'll be charging both sides. If somebody else brought in a buyer, then that agent will be charging the buyer. Some agencies have a bit of a greedy policy, whereas they want to be the ones double dipping and charging both sides. In which case, a foreigner-friendly, flexible, bilingual agent will offer you the option to pay them separately for their fees. But in that case, you will need to pay a double fee. So I reserve that for properties that you're otherwise very, very interested in. Anyone else? There was another hand there before. No? Anything from the stream? No? Thank you for your time.